Okay, welcome back, and here we go, hour number two. For all of you out there who have a different opinion on the topic of this hour, which is the topic of viruses, or virions, or whatever you want to call them, you have your full guaranteed right to think however you will. And we're not here to force you to think in any way. We're here simply to present information to perhaps those of you who don't believe there are viruses, maybe challenge your views and look at the people you look up to who are leading you down a very one-way cul-de-sac to nowhere. Believe it. There are viruses out there all over the place. We're going to read some things this hour, have a little fun with it, and Erica is with us again, as always. All right, you there, partner?
I'm here, Jeff. Good evening.
Good evening to you. Let's just start here for fun with Wikipedia, which is, I don't like Wikipedia. I think most of you know that. It's an open sewer. It's an opportunity to defame, smear, and discredit people with no repercussions. So have fun with that. But other things are rather interesting. Look up virus in Wikipedia. What do you get? Erica told me about this the other day. I'm going to read just this first paragraph or two, Erica, then we'll comment on that, and we'll move on to our next area. Wikipedia says a virus is a submicroscopic infectious agent that replicates only inside the living cells of an organism. Correct?
Yep.
Number two, viruses infect all life forms from animals and plants to microorganisms, including bacteria and other small forms of life. Yes?
Correct.
Since Dmitry Ivanovsky's 1892 article describing a non-bacterial pathogen infecting tobacco plants and the discovery of the tobacco mosaic virus by Martinus Bergenik in 1898, more than 9,000 different virus species have been described in great detail of the millions of types of viruses that exist in the environment. So back in 1898, they had already identified 9,000 different kinds of virus species. Correct?
Yeah, we've come a long way.
Viruses are found in almost every ecosystem on Earth and are the most numerous type of biological entities of all. The study of viruses is known as virology, a subspecialty of microbiology. Now, Erica's background is biophysiology with a very heavy emphasis on nanotechnology. Just real quick, before I finish this, what is the size comparison of the typical nanotech item and a virus? Are they close? Are they similar?
Oh, they're extremely. I mean, viruses are considered nanotechnology, and they are exploited for their properties with various applications and with nanotechnology.
Right. All right, let me finish this up. When infected, and that's you folks and us, a host cell is often forced to rapidly produce thousands of copies of the original virus. It's actually even higher than that in some cases. When not inside an infected cell or in the process of infecting a cell, virus exists in the form of independent particles or otherwise known as virions, consisting of the genetic material, i.e., long molecules of DNA or RNA that encode the structure of the proteins by which the virus acts. And there's more. But I'm going to stop there. That's just to give you an idea of what Wikipedia has to say about it. So have at it. You know, go do your homework. If you bought into this latest obvious psyop of intentionally trying to steer people away from science reality into science fiction, and there are some very clever prosecutors of this lie, believe it, think. Don't give up. As soon as you feel that you've found the ultimate answer to almost anything, you're out of the game. There's always more to learn. And we're always trying to learn here and help you learn. Okay. What did Wiki miss there? Is there anything we should go over? Give us your overview, and then we're going to play a little sound clip here, which I think most of you will find to be very interesting, if not amusing. Go ahead.
I think we need to agree on the definition of a virus, and maybe that's where some of the confusion is starting. A virus is merely a package of genetic material, either RNA or DNA. And I think there's some tendency right now to say that they're the same thing as the packages of genetic material that our own bodies produce, known as exosomes. They're not. The difference being that a virus is foreign to your body, and it can act as a parasite and take over the protein translation of various cells and tissues in your body to the detriment of, you know, whatever proteins your body's trying to produce, and then that's where they cause their damage. Aside from destroying cells when they do that, in some cases.
Our bodies produce countless proteins for countless functions, correct?
Yes, and when it's humming along nicely, everything is well coordinated and well timed. You know, but when there is foreign genetic material present and proteins are being produced to the exclusion of your own proteins, then there's a problem. That can be very disruptive depending on how much, when, where, how often.
Right. So keep in mind the idea that RNA or DNA in a little package, a little tiny nanotech-sized package, is a virus. And they had over 9,000 identified by 1898.
I think since 1898.
Since 1890, that was the first one. So we've come a long way. 9,000 identified. I'll bet it's higher than that. Whatever.
Oh, it is by now. According to Wikipedia, as of June of last year, 2021, they had sequenced 11,464 full in their full length. Now, fully sequenced, yes, to the point where, this is basically the recipe of how to build the virus. Because they've been able to take it apart chemically and study it and sequence it to the point where in 2017, a doctor by the name of David Evans at the University of Alberta was able to chemically synthesize an entire pox virus just by using the recipe.
You mean he put the ingredients together and actually built a virus?
Yes, yes, and that caused quite a stir. Because, you know, if you have a little bit of knowledge, it's not that hard to do. And these genomes, these viral genomes of some, in some cases, very pathogenic, disease-causing viruses are public domain.
So, Erica, tell me, what's going on in all these biosafety level 3 and 4, otherwise known as BSL-3, BSL-4, bioweapon development laboratories, of which there are at least 10 or 12 in Ukraine, all being paid for by your tax dollars, ladies and gentlemen, coming out of the DOD and the Pentagram and other things. What are they doing in those places? Are they playing games? Are they playing with things that don't exist?
they will tell you that they're not weapons labs. They're biocontainment labs.
Biocontainment
labs. But no, they're working with known pathogenic organisms, and some of which is bacteria, but many of which are viruses. And now, because these viruses have been so well characterized and so well understood, we can now manipulate them to give them attributes they wouldn't normally have. And make them, turn them literally into weapons.
Gosh, seems like I've heard this before somewhere. We know viruses so well now, and just to repeat what Erica just said, we can take them apart, reconstruct them, we can modify them. We use them as vectors.
Yep.
We make weapons out of them, which is what we were doing in Ukraine, and what we also are doing in Georgia, not the state over here, the nation over there, and it's all being paid for by American tax dollars. And, you know, I can't help but think the Bidens just might be involved with this a little bit here and there. It's all disgusting. It really is. And then to come out with this whole campaign led by Dr. Andrew Kaufman that viruses don't exist. It is so patently obvious, another psyop. I'd laugh, but it's really rather disgusting because it does is confuse people.
It's so laughable because, I mean, people work with this stuff every day in labs around the world, tweaking them, studying them, using them as vectors. I mean, they can be used for good. They can be used for evil. But to try to suggest that they don't exist is beyond absurd at this point.
It's so ridiculous. And now we have the HIV push. What is HIV? Huh? It's a virus.
Well, yes, it's a virus.
Okay, and I happen to have put together a book on HIV and AIDS in the 90s. And the mutating, I had the book reprinted today for the first time since, and I couldn't get to the point I wanted to find out the actual mutating potential of the HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. As I recall, it was 4,000 to the fifth power. That's how much it could mutate.
It's
like a jet, and there's no slowing it down. And they were only ever testing for a maximum of 6 forms of HIV when they were testing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to be asked, in fact, we're going to be scared into testing again, at least once a month, with your own home test kit. Because what do we have? We have the SARS-CoV-2 thing, which has pretty well run its course, but all the injections, 200 million Americans, maybe 4 billion people around the world, all of those people who got a viable and actually functional mRNA package in that injection are going to end up with no immune system. They're going to have AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. They will have AIDS. And the government, so people don't start thinking, well, it must have been that vaccine I got. They don't want that. So they're going to blame it on HIV. We've told you this before for weeks now. We're repeating it again. HIV will be the culprit that they're going to blame on the fact that billions of people are going to die with no immune function left. That's the game. This whole thing was designed to destroy human immunological competence, and it has done it marvelously. And you ain't seen nothing yet. Figure you were 9 to 12 months out from the first round of jabs. So just wait and see. These people are showing up in hospitals with all kinds of things. As Dr. Russell Blaylock said on video on this program, you will be seeing diseases that don't even have names, because there'll be nothing to fight them off, and they will mutate on their way into your body, and once they're in your body, there'll be nothing to fight them. Nothing. And they will turn into all manner of things. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's now coming out that the mRNA, at least in the Pfizer injection, and we could assume it's the same with the others, reverse transcribes into the person's DNA. Now, previously that was open to conjecture whether or not that did happen or not. It seemed to be dependent on a number of things, but they assured us in the beginning that, no, it's temporary. You know, the thing gets in there, and your own enzymes will degrade it so that it's no longer producing a protein, and then, you know, within a period of a couple days, it's gone. Well, then they extended it out to about a week, and then a month, and then, well, maybe 2 months. Well, now it may be forever if it's in the DNA.
That's where my money is. What's going to go into the DNA force it to revert back to its original form? Nothing. We don't have any.
There's two issues here. Number one, you have the possibility that you're going to be producing some spike protein forever. And number two, where in your genome did it integrate itself? Did it integrate near an oncogene? And if so, you may have cancer.
That'll trigger it right away. And remember what Dr. Chetty said. It is the most evil, deadly thing that man has ever created, the spike protein.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing him. Now, there's a very important article put out by the BBC. I put it under our names and guests. So by all means, please take a look at that. Not at this moment, but do read it and consider it. Understand that they, Big Pharma, are using now HIV, a virus, to hide the damnable satanic work that they have done with their bioweapon injections, which have, in fact, destroyed the immunocompetency of billions of people. You haven't seen it yet. Remember what the Germans found, only two shots, and you had only 12.3% of your immune function left. That's it. 87% of your immune function is gone. It's gone. You don't have an immune system, except for 12%. And we don't know what happened 2 weeks later. Had they done another test 2 weeks later, it could have been down to 6%. We don't know. A month later, 0%. These people who got a functional shot. Now, some of the, please explain how some of these bioweapon injections might not have worked, and how people might have gotten lucky in some cases and not been fully nailed with them and may still have a quasi-functional immune system in time. What was it about the mRNA that might not have worked?
Back in December of 2019, there was a data dump from Pfizer, and in those documents, there was some quality control analyses, reports, or whatever. And when they had gone to mass scale production, they had analyzed the amount of intact mRNA that was in the vials. And in some cases, it was only about 55% of what was supposed to be there, because it was rushed. It was rushed, and they didn't take the steps that they normally would have during the small-scale clinical trials to assure that high level of quality. So there were issues coming off of the production line, and then there could have been, might have been, issues with storage, transport and storage. As you know, those lipid nanoparticle vaccines required very, very cold temperatures. And if that any portion of that, the transport or storage was compromised, then you may not have had a viable injection.
Well, but for our listeners, what changed that minus 92 or 93 degrees storage Fahrenheit temperature that had to be maintained? Why did they drop it all of a sudden and make it 34 degrees refrigerator temperature? What happened there?
They made some changes to their mRNA to make it more thermostable, so less apt to degrade at a warmer temperature. See, with the lipid nanoparticles, if it gets too warm, they melt, and then the whole thing falls apart. So the reason for keeping it so cold is to protect the mRNA that's encased in these lipid nanoparticles. And, of course, if you warm up a fat, it gets soft. So it was principally to preserve the integrity of the mRNA, the delivery.
One quick note before we move on. Lipid nanoparticles in and of themselves are toxic and dangerous.
Yes,
and
yes.
People don't even talk about that anymore.
Hardly ever. But that was one of the hurdles all along when they first, came up with this transfection technology that Robert Malone takes credit for back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was wonderful, but the problem was that these positively charged lipids were really, really toxic to the cell and the cell membrane and the organelles within the cell, so the cell would just die.
All right. So the point here is that some of the people who got shot up, maybe a lot of them, I don't know. We don't know. Some of those people got defective bioweapon injections, okay? The mRNA package broke down, didn't work, whatever.
Yeah.
So they may have been very lucky and blessed, at least one of their 15 shots or however many they're giving now. That's a joke. It's at least four. So one of their shots might have been harmless. And if they stopped at one, maybe they really got lucky. Think about that. But if they went on and went, got number two, and then they got two boosters, they're in trouble. Okay? All right. Now, the number one most visible proponent of the ludicrous psychological operation that claims there are no such things as viruses is Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who has one hell of an expensive and nice-looking toupee. Other than that, he is a man who has no serious medical background, per se. He's a psychiatrist, okay? Now, here's a little tiny clip. Actually, you'll hear his voice, and I want you to hear it clearly, so I'm going to put it right up to the microphone. This is Dr. Andrew Kaufman about his experience with studying viruses.
You know, I've never done virus research.
What did you say? Did you hear that? Was that clear?
I heard it.
Well, I think I'm going to play that again. I find that hard to believe. This is the man who's telling us he has absolute certainty and surety and guarantees us that there are no viruses, and yet he says,
you know, I've never done virus research.
Really, Andy? That is a mighty nice toupee you have, by the way. You look good. That was money well spent. Good job. But one more time in case you missed that, and then we'll play a little more. Well, I'll hold it off till later, because I want to do this first. All right, this is a little clip from Dr. Andy Kaufman with, maybe you saw it. Who's with him now?
This was the coronavirus, the court in Germany, Rainer Fulmich.
Oh, yes, Rainer Fulmich, okay. All right, here we go. Now, I want you to take a look. Listen, now this is a man who's never done any virus research, okay? And yet he's going to guarantee us, without any equivocation, that there are no such things as viruses. I hope I have this right. I think I do.
And I want to say and emphasize this because I keep being accused of putting forth a theory. I don't have a theory. I'm refuting a theory. In other words, I'm saying the evidence claimed to back up germ theory, specifically with respect to pathologic viruses, simply is lacking.
But wait, Andy. Wait a minute. Let me get my phone here. Didn't you just say something?
You know, I've never done virus research.
Interesting. I wonder where he got his knowledge and wisdom. All right, here, let's go back.
And I haven't heard anyone present any evidence of how the experiments put forth to prove the existence of viruses actually proved viruses. And that is the only really argument that I'm interested in, because of course we agree on everything else, because if there's no virus, then everything else is false.
Everything else is false. Now, he didn't qualify that. So I don't know how far he's taking it, to be honest. I don't know. Any comment so far?
No, go ahead.
So we agree that everything else is false. We are having a difficult time looking at this. And you have to look at this issue as if you're just curious and you don't have any predetermined ideas. Like, I want to know, do viruses cause disease? Let me see. What's the proof that...
You think Andy has no predetermined ideas about this? Yet he's leading the charge screaming the biggest foul in science that there are no viruses. And yet I just heard him say he's never studied. Well, never mind. Details. Silly details.
Scientists put forward, does that prove that viruses cause disease? Yes or no? And that's the only issue that I'm speaking to, not for what is the real or true explanation for an illness, just whether or not viruses cause the illness. And if you look at the evidence put forth, you'll see that they have not met the burden of proof. And I have no self-interest in this. In fact, it's cost me dearly in terms of my relationships, my profession. I was terminated.
Well, hell, come on. You got a great toupee out of it, Andy. Give me a break.
From my position, because of saying these things, I was disqualified as an expert witness in court. But nonetheless, why do I keep saying these arguments? Because this is simply the truth. And no one has put...
Now, how would he know that it's simply the truth? Can when he said just a minute ago...
You know, I've never done virus research.
I'm sorry, I can't follow this logically and pragmatically. It's difficult.
With any logical or scientific argument demonstrating how these experiments prove viruses. So facing no contradictory direct evidence, I feel quite validated that this is actually the closest to the truth that we have about the virus issue. Now, I do not feel that this is a good strategy to use in a legal strategy. In fact, I personally, as a pro se litigant, am suing a couple of different parties who violated my rights individually based on tyrannical COVID policies that are not backed up on science. But I don't need to make this argument. And as you pointed out, it would be extremely controversial. So why is it important, and why is it important to discuss it on this forum? It's because, firstly, this is the actual truth. And secondly, it has severe consequences for our ability to...
Am I missing something here? How is it that he is telling me what is the actual, the total actual truth? What I don't understand it, because the man told me himself...
You know, I've never done virus research.
Where did he find his information? In a cereal box? I don't understand. Erica, I'm really feeling disconnected here. All right, let me listen a little bit more here. Do you have a comment?
No, go ahead.
All right.
Understand and be free from manipulation, as well as for our health. If we keep believing the false narrative and we accept medical interventions based on a false cause of disease, then it will be to our detriment. And this is what has happened with these so-called gene therapy vaccines. So I feel it is the primary issue in the pandemic. And it...
What pandemic, Andy?
Argued from first principles of logic, looking at the evidence and simply refuting the primary evidence put forth to prove a claim.
What are the first principles of logic? That's a new one on me.
Thus, the claim is baseless. And I wish you all a lot of success in whatever legal strategy, because that's obviously your expertise, and I hope that you are successful. But personally, I don't trust the courts to administer justice, and I don't trust them to understand or acknowledge the truth. But I think that we need to use all the strategies at our disposal in order to be able to live a life going forward where we can exert our free will.
What the hell is he talking about?
I don't know. I've lost the plot.
It sounds like what they like to call word salad. I don't understand it. I like to think I'm reasonably smart.
The responsibility for our actions as we're meant to, as living men and women on this earth.
As living men and women on this earth. Don't forget that.
I agree wholeheartedly. And they say... All roads lead to...
All right, well, that's Reiner Fulmick there. Now, you just heard, again, Dr. Andy Kaufman, maybe the greatest guy in the world. I don't know him. But Andy Kaufman just gave us a big dose of a rather rambling dissertation, which made no sense to me, about why there are no viruses, and yet Andy Kaufman...
You know, I've never done virus research.
I think maybe he ought to do a little virus research and then come back.
I'd say you're right.
Okay, I don't know.
It's so absurd.
It is.
I can think of
totally.
Is this has got to be, it's, for this thing to be picking up steam right now, there's got to be an agenda with it.
Of course there is. There are no coincidences. This is a launched program to keep the pot of chaos stirring up more trouble all the time, keep people off balance, confuse them. Oh, man. We're just about to get hit with HIV big time. You watch. HIV virus? Yeah, so they're splitting. It's called fragmentation. That's what they do. They don't want any group of people to come together. Go ahead.
I should probably point out that this is maybe somewhat of an easy sell on our current population, these last few generations. We've never really had to deal with a pandemic, epidemic. I mean, infectious contagious diseases are mostly a thing of the past. So I think people are failing to appreciate the devastation that a legitimately lethal virus could do in a population. I mean, this SARS thing was not, you know, anything that was going to, I mean, it was never a pandemic. We know that. You know, the annual death rate did not go up.
There were no excess deaths.
There were no excess deaths, correct. So that part of it was a scam, no doubt. But I, you know, to say that there's no viruses if there are viruses, they're only infectious or pathogenic if you are in a state of ill health, no, that's not true. What they're doing in these labs are deliberately designed to overcome your natural defenses. These viruses, genetic material, are designed to replicate, copy themselves, and keep going. And if you can't shut it down, it takes over.
Right. Well,
and I might add that since these types of injections have been foisted on the population in the past year, the incidence of Morgellons has exploded.
Okay. We'll talk in the future more about that with Cliff Mickelson and maybe some others. Sad. That suggests, remember, the reduction in your efficiency in terms of having any kind of an immunological competency. You don't have an immunological system that works. You begin to be open. The door is open. And why couldn't Morgellons proliferate? Sure.
Well, and the fact that the genetic material that they are creating in the lab is not natural. It's been modified so that it's synthetic, and it does not break down the way, you know, the mRNA or DNA in your body would break down.
Right. So those of you who have been following Dr. Andrew Kaufman, just remember that he has never studied viruses. So if you want to line up and follow people, you might want to follow people who have. It'd be my guess, but he does have a mighty nice toupee. That's a good one.
And I don't know how he can overlook. I mean, the best example of an infectious, contagious, potentially lethal virus is the rabbit myxoma virus that was released in Australia.
Oh, it's a matter of literature. It's in the record. Tell real quickly what it is.
Yeah, so the European rabbit was imported to Australia at the end of the 1800s for sport. And rabbits are not indigenous to Australia, so they had to import them. And because there was no natural predator, they very quickly became a pest. And they were eating much of the vegetation that the native species were dependent on to survive, and just wreaking havoc. And for a number of years, they tried to eradicate them or at least diminish their numbers, but because rabbits are so prolific, I mean, the average rabbit can have, what is it, five baby bunnies seven times a year? So that population with no natural predators just exploded. They tried poisoning them. They employed another technique called ripping, where they would take machinery and go and just dig up places where the rabbits lived and just basically decimate them physically.
Well, it's like a big subsoiler, a farm tool, and they tear up the ground.
Yeah. So really inhumane ways of dealing with them. And then a guy by the name of Frank Fenner, virologist, came up with the idea of trying a virus. And in 1950, they succeeded in releasing a rabbit virus known as myxoma. And it was lethal to European rabbits, but it was not lethal to the South American rabbits. The South American rabbits had evolved with it over many generations, and so they could carry it and not be affected by it, but not the European rabbits. And within 2 years' time, it had ripped through the population and diminished probably 90% of them.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Now, what I'm going to do is start reading. I really recommend all of you read, especially Andy, if you're listening, and we like you. And we think everyone should have the right to believe whatever they want. That's fine. We're just offering up a little evidence from the other side of the table so people can better make their own decisions. And we do work with people here who have tremendous experience with viruses. All right, here's the BBC article. Why the world needs viruses to function. Subtitle: if all viruses disappeared, the world would be very different, and not necessarily for the better. But what exactly would happen? And we begin. Viruses seem to exist solely to wreak havoc on society and bring suffering to humanity. They have cost untold lives over the millennia, often knocking out significant chunks of the global population, from the 1918 influenza epidemic, which killed 50 to 100 million people, to the estimated 200 million who died from smallpox in the 20th century alone. The current COVID-19 pandemic is just one in a series of ongoing and never-ending deadly viral assaults. Well, I disagree entirely with that, but that's the BBC article. I'm just reading it. If given the choice to magically wave a wand and cause all viruses to disappear, most people would probably jump at that opportunity, especially now. Yet this would be a deadly mistake, deadlier, in fact, than any virus could ever be. If all viruses suddenly disappeared, the world would be a wonderful place for about a day and a half, and then we'd all die. That's the bottom line, says Tony Goldberg, an epidemiologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. All the essential things they do in the world far outweigh the bad. The vast majority of viruses are not pathogenic to humans at all, and many play integral roles in propping up ecosystems. Others maintain the health of individual organisms. Everything from fungi and plants to insects and humans. We live in a balance, in a perfect equilibrium. And viruses are a part of that, says Susana Lopez-Charitan, a virologist at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. I think we'd be done without viruses, she said. Most people are not aware of the role viruses play in supporting much of life on Earth, because we tend to focus only on the ones that cause humanity difficulty. Nearly all virologists solely study pathogens. Only recently have a few intrepid researchers begun investigating the viruses that keep us and the planet alive rather than kill us. It's a small school of scientists who are trying to provide a fair and balanced view of the world of viruses, and to show that there are such things as good viruses, says Dr. Goldberg. All right, comment?
Yeah, so that's the other side of it, that there are, I mean, we are colonized by a wide range of viruses. And a lot of the viruses are actually what they call bacteriophages. They infect bacteria. So they provide a service in keeping certain bacteria at a low level. But then there's other ones, too, that do provide a service. Some of the herpes viruses actually do have a beneficial function.
Really? Besides disfiguring your lip when they break out in your mouth?
Yep.
Okay. What scientists know for sure is that without viruses, life and the planet as we know it would cease to exist. And even if we wanted to, it would probably be impossible to annihilate every virus on Earth. But by imagining what the world would be like without viruses, we can better understand not only how integral they are to our survival, but also how much we still have to learn about them. So studying viruses is very important. Go ahead.
Yeah, so...
Anything else?
No, keep going.
All right.
Get to the part where they actually have a symbiotic. Some of them have a symbiotic relationship with the host.
And I know Andy's a good guy, and this is Andy talking about his experience studying viruses.
You know, I've never done virus research.
That's straight from the horse's mouth. So, okay, be careful who you follow. How's that? All right. So key to ecosystems. Let me go down to this. I think it's right past the those things out in the national.
The field of cows. Okay. Protective to humans.
Yeah. Okay. Protective to humans. Infection with certain benign viruses even can help to ward off some pathogens among humans. GB virus C, a common bloodborne human virus that is a non-pathogenic distant relative of West Nile virus and dengue fever, is linked to delayed progression to AIDS in people who are HIV positive. Scientists also found that GB virus C, seems to make people infected with Ebola less likely to die. Interesting. Likewise, herpes makes mice less susceptible to certain bacterial infections, including the bubonic plague and listeria, a common type of food poisoning. Infecting people with herpes virus, bubonic plague, and listeria to replicate the mouse experiment would be unethical. But the study's authors suspect that their findings in rodents likely also apply to humans.
This idea of competitive inhibition. I mean, nature, the general rule of nature is nature abhors a vacuum. And when you try to eradicate life forms that have taken up residence for whatever reason, you know, you've provided a favorable environment for them, something else will invariably fill in that void. And I think one of the most striking examples of that is when they came out with the vaccine for human papillomavirus, they targeted the strains of papillomavirus that were most associated with progressing to cancer. And the vaccine was actually rather successful in eradicating those strains. But what they found in the years since is the human papillomavirus are still being found in women, and some really bizarre strains that were not really in high numbers prior to the eradication of these common ones have now moved in, and we don't even know what are these strains going to produce.
Indeed.
So I think, you know, manipulating with life at this level is just a bad idea. You know, I think every time man tinkers with this kind of stuff, it just creates more problems than it solves.
I guess the moral of this hour has been, and there's a little tongue-in-cheek and having a little fun, but you got to laugh. If we don't remember how to laugh in these dark times, we're lost. If you're going to follow someone, at least follow someone who has done research in the field that you're choosing to follow. Okay? Is that fair? I think
yes.
So.
Yes, yes.
All right, let me go back to this article here. While lifelong infection with herpes viruses are commonly viewed as solely pathogenic, they write, their data suggests that herpes, in fact, enters into a symbiotic relationship with its host by conferring immune benefits. Without viruses, we and many other species might be more prone to succumbing to other diseases. Viruses are also some of the most promising therapeutic agents for treating certain maladies. Phage therapy, the subject of considerable research in the Soviet Union as far back as the 20s, uses viruses to target bacterial infections. It's now a quickly growing field, not only because of increasing antibiotic resistance, but also because of the ability to fine-tune treatments to knock out specific bacterial species, rather than indiscriminately wipe out your entire bacterial populations, as antibiotics do to you. Every time you're on antibiotics, you lose about, if you're an adult, you lose 7+ pounds of digestive bacteria that you must have.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't tell you to repopulate or tell you how. All right,
and
we're going to wrap it
species,
up about here. Yeah, go ahead.
Some of those species that get wiped out never come back. You know, they're not ones that you would find on a store shelf that you
That's
could replace.
Another thing.
Once they're gone,
That's,
they're gone.
I didn't know that until a few years ago, that you cannot apparently fully repopulate your digestive tract with all the appropriate bacteria that you were born with or otherwise somehow made to acquire. It's
right.
Just not doable. This is not good. We need viruses for a suite of research and technology development efforts that are going to lead us into the next generation of therapeutics. So, again, just be careful what you glom onto, right? It's kind of like flat earth. It's quite a trendy thing, and there are some interesting arguments that the people make. I will not diminish that for a moment, but it just doesn't work. If you really study physics and planetary physics, it's just not there. Doesn't happen. All right. Final minute and a half here, kiddo.
Oh, I think we covered it. I hope people take the time to just, you know, look and listen. This is not a time to let your guard down. The biowarfare is real. And
we're the targets. Don't forget that for
yeah,
a second.
Yeah, I mean, there is a stated depopulation agenda, and this is very effective, a very effective method of achieving that.
Now think again about how they were so clever and they planned this out in the past years and years ago by putting pieces of HIV into this deadly concoction that they're injecting in people. Why did they do that? People were asking that question. Well, now we seem to have the answer. They're going to use HIV as the excuse as to why people are losing their immunological competence. They have no more immune system because they've been infected with HIV. That's the game. You see how they shifted it? They don't want any blame put on their injections, so they're going to use HIV. Wow.
Yeah,
actually, it's pretty clever when you think about it, because they got just enough in the shots that'll trick those tests into flipping positive. That's what they're going
right.
to do.
Right. And the other thing, I mean, it's looking for that P24 protein, which is a marker protein on the HIV virus that also just happens to be in the spike protein. But the other reason that could throw a positive for a P24 is if you have an autoimmune condition, such as lupus or hemolytic anemia or rheumatoid arthritis, of which there's going to be a lot of that from these shots.
Oh, yeah. Well, what we're seeing now, we're 9 to 12 months out, and we're beginning to see massive implosions, immunologically speaking, all across the country and around the world. People are coming down with diseases, cancers, super cancers that are wiping them out in 2 weeks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Diseases that don't even have names and haven't even been known to infect people. Just listen to the Russell Blaylock show that that we did a couple months back. Brilliant, brilliant man, Russell Blaylock. So we're in real trouble here. You don't want to be running off chasing illusions. You want to really try and focus on keeping yourself healthy, right? And for those of you who are not vaxxed, the best advice we can give you is, go ahead.
Don't get vaxxed.
and stay away as much as you can from general crowds and people. You don't know if they're vaxxed.
This shedding is absolutely real.
And can be deadly. Okay?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, my friend, thank you. Wonderful.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
All right.
All right, good night, everyone.
We'll be right back with hour number 3 with Mitch Henderson coming up next.